This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday, and a busy one indeed. Matt, Brett here, a Supreme Court Justice announcing his retirement, and Mitch McConnell announces the new long-standing Senate rule. Democratic presidents, when they have only a majority of the vice president in the Senate, they can't seat a Supreme Court Justice for 3 years before the next election. That's just science at this point. Long-established policy.
Yeah, I remember hearing that too, yeah.
We've got Stein to talk about that as well as other things. Ron Latch, Senator Ron Latch, my senator. I got a funny story to share with him when he joins us in the 5 o'clock hour here today. But Brett, did you steal the Metro Mobility bus?
I'm not going to answer that question and incriminate myself. So I'm just going to remain silent.
We're going to do like a lot of Republicans over the next few months. I plead the fifth. Or you could always go with the Matt told me to do it, and Matt told me it was okay. Trust me, that one they've tried that one a few times, doesn't fly. We have to have a new segment here called "Don't Do That, Stupid." Okay, and I don't want to say this, but you and I have talked repeatedly over the last year. Do not leave your car running with the keys in it. In the cities or anywhere. I had a friend who was out in, was it Barron, Wisconsin? And just out on a rural road. And same thing happened. He was scouting hunting places. So he parked, started walking on a trail, came back, car's gone. So, well, what happened? Did they break in, hot wire it? No, the keys were in it. So some guy in rural Wisconsin drove past and, hey, I'm going to go check that car out. Hey, jackpot, off we go.
That is a little weird, yeah, to actually have someone stop and say, I mean, I don't stop when I see a car on the road, even if it's one I think would be cool to own, and like, maybe I'll go steal it.
You and I have not waded in the hot tub of criminal activity. Well, the least less I say, the better.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've got to be careful with, you know, certain things I can admit. Sorry, Denmark. Anyway, you and I are not criminal minds.
No.
So, you know, we see a car. What's the first thing we say is, well, what an idiot. He left his car running here. We're not like, you left his car running here.
How did the guy even tell the car was running in the first place?
Well, no, the car wasn't running. He just left it unlocked with the keys in it. So,
yeah. But the person driving by, how did he know it was running? He had to have stopped.
No, it wasn't running, though. No, the car wasn't running.
Oh, I got you.
So you just, he's a criminal element. He's saying, oh, well, there's a car there. Let's see if I get a freebie. There we go. And off you go. Yahtzee. So it's not something that happens only in metro areas. You shouldn't leave your car keys in the car unless you're in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, but then I'm just going to let you know the other problem in Canada. What's going to happen is you're going to have half your neighbors. Hey, I was checking your car and noticed your keys are here, so I brought them up to the house for you. There you go, nice and safe for you. Okay. I also spread some air freshener in your car. It's a little ripe in there. So hope you're having a nice day. Welcome to Canada. You know, that's just have the, you're going to get more harassment from them trying to bring the keys in. So just keep your keys with you. Okay. I'm just going to say. You and I, it has been perplexing, especially gas stations in the Midway. What are you doing? What are you doing leaving your car running in the Midway with the keys in it and saying, oh, I guess this is going to be here when I come back? It takes, by the time your second creamer is poured into your coffee, it's gone, okay? I'm just going to let you know. It's on University and heading one direction or the other. It's gone. Apparently, we have to tell this to the Metro Mobility buses, too. A man is accused of stealing a Metro Mobility bus and leading police on an hours-long pursuit that spans several cities. Brandon Scott Bros, 31, charged in Ramsey County District Court with a vehicle theft and fleeing a police officer in a vehicle. He's accused of stealing the Metro Mobility bus in St. Paul early morning hours of January 20th. The bus was left with the keys inside while the driver grabbed something from their personal vehicle. He is also being investigated in connection with two other recent Metro Mobility bus thefts.
Wait, he's This is the third time he's done it. Jeez.
Oh, God. Sometimes living in the city, I don't know if I need to cry or laugh at this one.
The guy's got to leave his mark every time, you know, like wet bandits from Home Alone.
Do you want to take the Audi? No, I got my eye on another vehicle over the bus. I mean, how do you even – I mean, okay, I got to ask you, what are you doing with the bus? Can you chop shop the bus down? I don't think you can. It's not like you can take a row of seats out of the Metro Mobility bus and put it in the back of a Porsche. According to the criminal complaint, Metro Transit Police responded to the report of a stolen bus. God. A stolen bus at the First Transit Building. So he's at the transit building. Okay. One Ritter Circle in St. Paul at 4:21 a.m. on Thursday, January 20th. Wow, I hope it was bundled up. The bus driver said that about 3:56 a.m., she got a Metro Mobility bus and started it up. She drove to her personal vehicle, grabbed something, and left the bus unattended with the keys inside, at which point, gone. Investigators tracked the bus via GPS. The thief, lever identified as Bros, drove it through several cities. And were you making stops? Is that what's going on here? Are you actually, like, picking people up? Did you do the route for Metro Mobility that day? Better ways to get a job, my friend. St. Paul, Matamidi, Woodbury, White Bear Township, White Bear Lake, and Roseville. So hitting the North Metro, Northeast Metro there. Authorities several times tried to stop the bus, but each time Bros fled. B-R-O-S-E, by the way, not Bros. At about 9:15 a.m. on January 20th, Ramsey County Sheriff's deputies were called and followed the bus from Roseville into St. Paul. Bros, during the time, ignored stop signs, violated traffic laws. So pretty standard for a Metro Mobility bus. I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. I am sorry. That is uncalled for. I am wrong. That's a joke. That's what I do. I'm sorry.
Trust me, as I have friends who use Metro in the disability community, they are probably not surprised at all by anything they're hearing in this story from their experiences.
The Metro Mobility bus driver thinks I'm number one. Anyway, during the pursuit, deputies lost sight of the bus in an alley, but eventually found it unoccupied at 811 Edmund Avenue in West St. Paul. Edmund Avenue West in St. Paul, I should say. The deputy spotted a man, later identified as Bros. His pants were covered with snow and there were leaves on his jacket. I don't know. When the deputy spoke to Bros, he was nervous and evasive. And the deputy's questions on Bros, police recovered a syringe, a glass bubble that's typically used to smoke meth. I can't do that joke. Bros was seen on the bus surveillance video covering the camera with shaving foam at 4:20. Covering the camera with shaving foam at 4:28 a.m. And a postal worker who saw Bros on the bus prior to him abandoning it confirmed he was the driver. Bros is currently on probation for auto theft charges after pleading guilty in 2020. Court documents state he's also had three warrants out for his arrest and failing to appear in court in connection with charges related to burglary and auto theft in 2020 and 2021. He was in court on Monday where his bail was set at $15,000. Bros is scheduled to appear in court again 2 p.m. February 7th. Who's going to take his shift then? Never mind. No.
I like that this is an annual thing for this guy. He's done one each of the last 3 years now. It's January 2023. Guess what I'm up to, kids?
The meth bus running through St. Paul. God. Don't leave your keys in any vehicle. Snowmobile, plane, anything. Take the keys with you. You can always start it back up again. I'm just saying. Bros has no permanent address listed in the court records. All right. Well, I'm going to guess somewhere in a tree, considering the leaves. I don't know where he was at, but covered in snow. His bottom was covered with snow. His top was covered with leaves. And he was smoking meth, you say? Okay. Wow. 9-5. A Metro. What do you – did this every time he just goes on a joyride? I mean, like I said, is he running the route? Maybe Metro Mobility needs to hire the guy. Get him cleaned up and let him run the route.
I got to get to the bottom of this. I actually have a friend of mine, last name of Bros, who uses Metro Mobility with the same spelling as you said in that story. So
does he live in a tree? Does he live in a tree? Does he have an address? I mean, that might be your first clue. Gary is in Minneapolis. Gary, I'm sure is on topic here. Welcome on in, Gary.
Hi, I'm Matt. You know, the Republicans, the ones that are puppets for the billionaires, had doubled their income during the pandemic, in other words, the last 2 years. But still, we have to pity them because they have their prices so high and they cause inflation. They blame Biden for it. And then we can't afford to have minimum wage, child tax credit, or free college pass. So it's really getting too much.
Yes, it is. And, well, I got a little story a little bit later on because the Senate Republicans spoke up today. And, yeah, I get to tear apart there. We already know where they're going. And, yeah, once again, for a group of politicians who always scream, keep your metro noses out of our district, they sure can't. Boy, they are sticking their noses all the way up the backside in Minneapolis and St. Paul. They can't. They love interfering in other people's districts. Don't you dare. I'll tell you what. I think it's time. If they start messing with Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hennepin County, Ramsey County, I think it's time for us to say you can only get as much taxpayer dollars back as you pay into the system. Because I'm tired of supporting the moocher class out there in rural Minnesota. So I think it's time. As a matter of fact, I want politicians that are willing to say, you know what? Yeah, all right. I mean, if you're going to just sit there and constantly vilify Hennepin County and Ramsey County, well, then you clearly don't need our money. And scene. Let's do the Minnesota coronavirus update. We'll start with it at least before the break here. Wednesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 15,572 newly reported cases, 52 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 11,282. The case update includes case data from the pardon me a second here. I got to shuffle through my briefs here. There we go. All right. It includes case data from the last 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Tuesday. But due to the Omicron surge overload, the health department, there remains approximately 23,700 positive tests that are yet to be processed and included in the daily reports. Okay, how do you know they're positive tests if they haven't been processed? It would tell me you have them and just put them all in one day, and then we just say, hey, these are just backlog. We're getting them done. I don't know what's going on there. But that 15,572 is a pretty big number there. And 52 deaths, once again, well, one is a pretty big number. 52 is god-awful. One for every week of the year, but we're doing it all in one day. Wow. Last week, the Mayo Clinic held a press briefing, said expects the reported cases to remain high before peaking perhaps this week. However, because reported cases lag what's happening in real time, Omicron wave may have already peaked in Minnesota. I got more on that here in a second. The Mayo Clinic has chimed in on that. Minnesota's test positivity rate on a 7-day rolling average through January 14th was 22.9%, having been as high as 23.7. It's slowly going down. So even though they got that 15,000 new cases, that, you know, the testing rate is down, so it tells me there must have been just a massive volume of tests that they processed. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota on the high-risk threshold category of the transmission of the coronavirus. Through January 25th, the number of people in COVID-19 hospitalized Minnesota was 1,553. That's up from 1,507 reported on January 24th. Of those hospitalized, 227 people are in intensive care, down from 228. 1,326 are in non-ICU care. That's up from 1,279. So that's up pretty dramatically, almost 50 higher in the 24-hour period. Once again, you know, going with the Omicron. Now, I want to make sure we understand something. When I say we're not seeing the ICU push like it was, there are still 227 people in the ICU, many of them on ventilators, that are questionable if they're going to make it through Omicron. Do not think that there aren't ICU cases. I want to be very clear about that because I think sometimes people hear it's like, oh, the ICU cases are coming down. There's still a lot of ICU cases. For one disease, not strokes, not heart attacks, not car crashes, not meth overdoses, nothing like that. Just for COVID, there are 227 people in ICU units alone in the state of Minnesota. That's obscene. That's obscene. If we had that many people all of a sudden enter into ICU units because of heart attacks, we'd be demanding what the heck's going on. Just the new normal here in the United States of America. Just shrug our shoulders because, heaven forbid, we're mildly inconvenienced as opposed to stopping the needless suffering. The 227, there's a lot of people in the ICU. So it's not as deadly as Delta, but it is deadly, and you got to be careful with it. 1,326 non-ICU care. That's up from 1,279 once again. A lot of people in the hospital, a lot of people who don't probably have really good health insurance, who all of a sudden are getting day after day after day of new medical debt. That's just the way things are now. The latest hospital capacity data shows there's 28 staffed ICU beds available. On January 24th, there's 15. There were 34 on January 24th. 15 pediatric ICU beds available, which is down from 17 on January 24th. As of January 24th, the state reported that 3,828,368 people have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine, while 3,585,745 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 2,001,267 third-dose booster shots, or over 2 million on the boosters. Yeah, good luck, Republicans, if you're going to run against anti-vaxxing, which, by the way, judging by what the Senate Republicans today, they're trying to completely and totally ignore COVID this upcoming session. They don't want to talk about that at all, because my gut feeling is they don't want to have to go on the record about that. I'll get back to that in a second. The total amount, 1,280,500 cases in the state of Minnesota. Let's take a break. Come on back. A story from the Mayo Clinic about putting things in perspective, okay? We'll talk about that when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Stein with us in about 10 minutes to talk national news, including the retirement of Justice Breyer. The Minnesota coronavirus update continuing. This is a story out of the Mayo Clinic. A peak in coronavirus infections likely has occurred in Minnesota. But Mayo Clinic forecasters on Wednesday warned the state's fifth pandemic wave is far from over. And I think this is actually a very important thing to make sure we reconcile here. Mayo's updated modeling predicted a peak in Minnesota's COVID-19 cases on January 31st, but the lag in reporting confirmed infections means the viral spread is already declining, said Curtis Storley, the co-creator of Mayo's predictive COVID-19 model and 14-day forecast. We're likely at peak reaching peak, Storley said. That what does that mean? It means we're half done with this current surge. It's important to recognize the Omicron surge is not over. There's going to be thousands of infections and hospitalizations on the way back down, too. I would say, considering we're having basically 11,000 infections per day, I think we're going to say, comfortable to say we're at least going to have 200,000 to 300,000 more Omicron infections in the state of Minnesota before this is over. I would say I'm pretty comfortable saying that. The predictions match with the sewage sampling. Oh, boy, you want a job. Who here has a ladle? Sorry. The predictions match with sewage sampling, a water treatment plant indicating declining presence of the virus in the Twin Cities in south central Minnesota, but not yet in the rest of the state. Of course, that department, the not it department. Whoever's doing that, bless you. You're doing science that no one else really wants to do. I'm very grateful for your sewage analysis. Okay. I really am. Thank you very much. Mayo officials provided an update on Wednesday. The Minnesota Department of Health reported another 52 COVID-19 deaths and 15,572 COVID infections. They declined for the second day in a row, reported a decline in positivity rate. So that's a good news. And then, of course, and I mentioned that earlier. The hospital hospitalizations have increased as well. The severity of illness overall is clearly less with Omicron compared with Delta and other variants, and clearly it is impacted by vaccinations and boosters, said Dr. Connor Loftus, chairman of the Mayo's outreach outpatient practice. Something tells me Connor Loftus came from Ireland. I'm just going to guess. He might not be Irish, but I'm guaranteeing his parents are. Hospital systems continue to report unvaccinated patients were more likely to need intensive care and ventilators to maintain adequate oxygen intake. Once again, hospital systems continue to report unvaccinated patients are more likely to need intensive care and ventilators to maintain adequate oxygen. Please. Minnesota ranks 17th among states with 67% of its population vaccinated with the initial one or two dose series. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the state also ranks second with nearly 53% of its fully vaccinated residents receiving boosters to address waning immunity that occurs around 6 months after the initial shots. And when they tell me I need another one, roll up the sleeves. Not a problem. Thank you very much. Have no problem with that. You know, it is mind-numbing. It is mind-numbing that we have had 2 years of data that said – well, not 2 years full. A year and a month now of data that says, oh, well, vaccinated people, they're weathering this a lot better than the unvaccinated. And yet we still have people saying, I'm going to get vaccinated for everything else but just not this because Jesus. No, it's not how that works on a lot of levels. Trust me. Please get vaccinated. I mean, the Mayo Clinic's point is very valid. It's not over. We've just peaked, which means we have a long hill down. All right, we had to climb up this hill to get to the top of the hill. We still have a long hill down. And in that time, and because I can tell you, I think just from the way that some of this is being reported and the way that the media is sort of like, we're past the peak, we're past the peak, we're past the peak. It's kind of saying, go on out and do stuff. No, I'm going to leave it up to the individual cities to what kind of mandates they put in place in regards to masks or vaccination. But we are a long way away from this going away completely. A month at least. So your safest bet, once again, get vaccinated, get boosted. On top of that, wear a mask, socially distance. Try to limit your amount of indoor activity out. Because the point I made on the earlier story, there are people dying of Omicron. There are people dying of Omicron. And yeah, there are. And you don't like that idea. You might not think that that's important. It is. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you saddled with a lifetime of freaking medical debt. Omicron can kill. Doesn't kill as much or as lethally as Delta did, but it still can kill. We had 52 dead today. 52. Many of them dying of Omicron. Stop with this mentality that this is over. Due diligence. Am I breathing a sigh of relief that the positivity rate numbers are starting to come down? Absolutely. I enjoy to see when the hospitalization numbers come down. Absolutely. But those are still pretty dang high numbers. And considering, like I said, we are having 10 to 15,000 new cases reported every day, before Omicron's done, we're going to have another 300,000 new cases. I would say, conservatively. Heck, in the next 10 days alone, we'll have 100,000. Yeah, we just want to be careful out there, okay? I want you to be careful. And once again, my new plea, or my new statement to nurses, doctors, anyone working in the healthcare industry, I don't care if you're delivering meals or if you're cleaning up rooms, anyone that's working there, bless you. Oh my God, you're angels. You're absolute angels. You're not getting nearly enough recognition, enough praise. You're wonderful, wonderful people. And you need a vacation and need a big raise. I'll be the one screaming loudest for you, okay? Absolutely. Bless you. All right. Thank you for what you're doing. We'll take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein, when we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
Jeff.
Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com as well. The Iowa Business Report is the daily show he does down in Iowa. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
If nominated, I will not serve. And if selected, I'm going to be trouble for America. I'm just telling you.
Well, you know, like, okay, first of all, that's just bull, because if he did nominate you, you'd run to Washington, D.C. for those. You'd be sprinting all the way there to get that. Hey, confirm me.
I want to be in the Georgetown house party circuit. Yes. No, here's why you won't. These people stay on until they're 80 whatever years old. I don't want to work that hard.
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's talk about that. In case, if you don't know what's talking about, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, one of the three liberal judges on the court, I would call, you know, the Chief Justice is pretty much kind of in the middle of the road, and the other five are on the conservative side. But yes. He has decided he's going to step down. He is not young. He's 83. He's going to leave. So these guys come on in. They hear these arguments. I have zero doubt they spend some time going over each case, but most of the materials are presented to them. They are presented to them in a narrative, as you know, the court clerks that work with them know how they kind of want to look at this. They find the applicable rulings, the applicable laws. They hand it to them. They make their decision. Someone else types it up, and then they head home. As much as I understand the longevity here, but these guys don't age like presidents do. Let's just be honest about it.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is stimulating mental work. Yes, these justices have clerks, and the justices themselves obviously have a temperament. The short of it is expansive view of the Constitution, narrower view of the Constitution. You hire clerks that comport with your judicial philosophy. Yes, they're the ones that are doing the work and then coming up with things, and the justice can sit there and engage in all sorts of oral arguments with the clerks, right, to hash this out, et cetera. So I can understand why it is a very appealing thing for some people. The only person I can think of, and you may have a better example, Matt, but the only person I can think of who got off the court early on was the one who was appointed, David Souter, appointed by George H.W. Bush, and he never wanted really to be there, and he retired at what one would call the more normal retirement age. He just didn't want to do it. Other than that, this is a job for people who truly look at it as a life commitment. And the timing today is fascinating, and apparently the original reports that Breyer was angry or upset that the news leaked, those are apparently overstated. He might be apparently surprised is the most recent. In other words, he tried to keep the decision close to the vest. He did not want it to leak until he announced it. It then leaked. And if you did not have an even temperament, you'd want to find out who in the blazes leaked it. And if it was anybody at the White House, you might say, oh, yeah, well, then I'll just stay on. But it does not appear that that's the case. He was going to retire. There had been rumors previously of him retiring, even during the Trump administration. So this does not change the balance, but it does allow someone with the same judicial temperament but 30 years younger to be on the court. And that, of course, is the spoil of elections.
Well, it's supposed to be, unless the Republicans – I mean, there's already – I'm not joking. There's already Republicans who have started floating the idea that maybe that Joe Biden should wait until after the midterm elections to try to push this through. And it's comical because, like I said, it's gotten to the point – I made the joke when the show started today that Mitch McConnell has said, now how – you know, there's no precedent here that no Democratic president 3 years before a reelection campaign has ever been able to place a Supreme Court justice on the court, so we need to stop it right there. I mean, that's the joke. But the reality is these Republicans have basically, let's be honest, last 10 years, they have created a system where Democrats can't put court justices on the court and Republicans do. Now you have a case where there clearly is no justification to hold up Joe Biden replacing Breyer, and especially after the shenanigans that the Republicans pulled at the end of Trump's term. Well, you know, it's clear at this point that you know, he's going to get this, but there's still – the argument is Republicans feel, no, you shouldn't have to, he should not have the right to replace this because he's a Democrat.
Oh, they have to say it the first – well, they don't have to, but they have to say it the first day, and it's done. You're not going to hear that anymore by anybody who has a lick of sense. Harry Reid started by the carve-out on the filibuster for other judges. Then the Republicans said, oh, yeah, we'll carve this out. And that's where we got into this crazy situation.
Okay, stop. I'm going to stop you right there. Republicans stopped Merrick Garland, says you can't have a Supreme Court. No, don't try to say, well, you know, Harry Reid is Harry. No. This insanely bipolar standard has been created solely by the Republicans. And the fact that they're still today kind of making the argument that the sitting president, a year into his term, should have to wait, even if it's just a joke, is comical that this is kind of the standard. And I mean, enough with Harry Reid. Harry Reid never did anything like this. This has all been Mitch McConnell and the Republicans. So stop trying to do the both sides thing, because it's not even close.
Matt, you're better than that. I thought you were better than that.
What?
The crap you just spewed out there. If you want to have an intelligent conversation about what comes next, fine. The Republicans... forget the Merrick Garland thing. Nobody's defending that.
They defended it. They defended it back when that happened. They defended it. They sat down. I mean, your own senator was out there.
It's not the same situation today. It is not at all the same situation. You just said first year of a term.
Yeah.
Anybody who tries to make this argument, it's ludicrous. And not worth my breath talking about.
But my problem is, you know, you always start with, well, Harry Reid started this. No, Harry Reid never did. Harry Reid never did the replacement of OAC, RBG. The replacement of her the way that, you know, after they said, well, you can't replace a Supreme Court justice right before an election, and that's why they basically refused to even have a hearing on Merrick Garland and then turn around and do it.
About 60 votes. You're talking about something entirely different. You're talking about the stuff that was done in the last year of the Obama administration. That's not at all the same thing I'm talking about. Not at all. But, and as you'll recall, I did not defend that at that time, did I?
Well, no, you didn't defend it at the time. But like I said, I want to make sure you understand why I got upset. You started this thing with, well, Harry Reid started carving out this. And it's like, no. We are way beyond anything that Harry Reid or any politician did prior to 2016. What we've got now, 60 votes or not, we've got Republicans who basically have played politics with the seating of the Supreme Court justices. They do this with abandon. And as you said, yes, it is a joke. Anyone today saying that Joe Biden should not be able to seat a replacement for Breyer. But the reality is if it wasn't Breyer, say it was Alito or Thomas. Holy God, would the Republicans be throwing a fit right now, because they would refuse to – they would do everything in their power to try to stop it, because they don't want to lose the conservatives on the court. It will be interesting to see what happens if Alito or Thomas, you know, God forbid something happens that they are not on that court anymore. And that happens, because right now I think the only reason that this is going to be replaced, the Republicans are going to get in line with this, is it's a liberal justice getting replaced. And so hence they already still have the massive advantage. So that's the case. But I'm not going to – the Harry Reid thing is just
– the thing you talked about with regard to Merrick Garland would never have happened had it not been for the prior carve-out. Now, if you want it – and that's all I was trying to point out. Is that this whole thing, and had I been able to finish, which I will now,
Okay. The
whole idea is there's nothing that a party with only 50 votes and no tie break can do. Not one single solitary thing they can do to stop it. And it started with these carve-outs. That's the fact of the matter. So in terms of the speech-making today, of people mumbling about, well, we should wait until, well, of course, you should wait until you're back in power. That is what the bottom line is. All of the advice that I have seen so far is to Republicans, look, you can't stop it. You can't influence it. You only will hurt yourself if you take an intelligent individual and try to make them look stupid in a hearing. It will backfire on you hugely. The smart play for Republicans is to say, make your nomination. We'll get our few little sound bites at hearings. We cannot stop it. And let Chuck Schumer see if he can get his 50 together so that Kamala can then break the tie and you'll have a Supreme Court justice. That's how this is going to play out. And anything else is just theater. And so you've got two individuals who are highly qualified, who fit the Biden promise of black female, one of whom at least was a Breyer clerk, and the Republicans thought that was wonderful when it was Kavanaugh replacing whoever, because he had been his clerk at Kennedy, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So this lines up as the easiest thing for the Democrats to do because it cannot be stopped, period.
Here's where my problem lies, is there are people who will say, in comparative example, the 1-6 insurrectionists were not insurrectionists because the beginning of that day they weren't storming the Capitol. And you can say, well, sure, fine, when they were listening to Trump speak, yeah, they weren't busting through windows and pooping all over the Capitol building, but they eventually did. It doesn't mean when they were sitting there for a speech that they were all breaking the law, not in any capacity. The idea of, well, Harry Reid carved out this. Harry Reid was put into a position to where what? The Republicans refused to basically cave on the filibuster to appoint any justices, not Supreme Court justices, any judges in the country, because what they were doing was loading up the court with conservatives. That's what they were trying to do. That's why they had it. And they got to a point where I think, what was it, like six judges out of a roster of something like 200 open seats had been approved. And so he had to carve that out. That wasn't against Supreme Court justices. So and that was very clear. Republican talking points back in 2016 was, you cannot sit a Supreme Court justice in an election year. That has nothing to do with Harry Reid. That has nothing to do with 60 votes. That was the standard. Your own senator championed that. They said they couldn't do that. And then in 2020, when Ginsburg's seat became open, they frantically ran back to the Capitol to approve her before the election and said, see, we can do whatever we want. It's not we can go back to the first day of the Supreme Court actually hearing back whenever it was, 1780 something. And say that was where this all began. We can all do that. But the reality is the modern day mutilation of the justice approval system is not Harry Reid. It's not Democrats. It has been an abomination created by Republicans with a purpose. And let's not argue the point. They have been wildly successful with this, to stock the Supreme Court with, you know, six conservatives, five, Kavanaugh and Roberts are a little questionable, but for sure, four of them. And that's my problem, is to sit there and sort of make the argument that, oh, well, you know, Harry Reid was the first one. Harry Reid, basically, they couldn't get any justices approved because Republicans were being, well, the filibuster, which once again, used to be you had to go and talk. Used to, you had to sit there and talk. I saw Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. You know, you had to go and sit there. The problem is this is now is that it's they've created rules that were applied, but now have been abused. And so to get away from the abuse, there was a small carve out. But then it became basically a free for all under the Republicans to basically successfully stock the Supreme Court. And so I just get tired of the first thing being, well, Harry Reid. Well, Harry Reid didn't do anything like what the Republican Party did the last 5 years in regards to Supreme Court justices or any courts.
Nothing you just said had anything to do with the point I was making.
I'm not saying so, my point was I tried my hardest to sell you at the beginning of this. My frustration is when you brought up Harry Reid. Harry Reid does not respond.
You didn't let me finish the sentence until you went on the first rant. Nothing to do when I finally finished it. It had nothing to do with what you just said. But that's fine. If you want, I mean,
okay, I'm the jackass. Okay, it is pretty standard. It is pretty common for the form.
If the jackass fits, but yeah. No, I mean it's look. This is one of the point is the system has become so bastardized. You're to a point now where Democrats can do whatever they want with this nomination, absolutely anything they want, including having Joe Biden nominate Kamala Harris and have herself be the tiebreak vote to put herself on the Supreme Court. Now, I'm not saying that's
That's not going to happen. I mean, I have yet to see any legitimate – I mean, I've seen the fantasies. I've seen the social media posts. They're all talking, Kamala Harris is going to be there. Elizabeth Warren's going to be the vice president. And then Biden's going to resign. And it's exactly as he forecast. Like, really? He forecast that? No, I don't think so.
Oh, no. I got a better one for you.
What's
I got
that?
A better one. This is a far better fantasy. And I made this one up this afternoon just to amuse myself. All right. Kamala Harris is the nominee. All right. And so she then would be in the position to be the tiebreak vote. And I only mentioned it initially to show how ludicrous the thing is, right? I mean, she's the one who would get to decide. I mean, any person in that position. So she then says, you know what? It really isn't right for me to be the tiebreak vote. You know, I mean, that just seems bad. So I'm going to resign as vice president since I've been nominated to the Supreme Court. And then Chuck Schumer can't get the 50 votes to approve her. And then what do they wind up doing?
Yeah.
Then potentially, would you say, now answer this, do you think Kamala Harris would fulfill Biden's promise to nominate an African-American woman to the court?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just look at the way the court's made up. I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. We'll come back and let's take a break. I'll come back. We'll finish up this discussion on this. No, I really do, because I think that the Democratic Party wants to have a Supreme Court that's more, representative of America today. And the fact that there is not a single black woman on the court, I think that whoever the Democratic president would be their first course of action. Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us on a contentious visit today. Jeff, it's not going to be Kamala Harris. And as a matter of fact, I think it's pretty clear that everyone that's talking, the one name that keeps coming out is Brown Jackson, the federal district judge in D.C. who Biden nominated to serve on the D.C. Circuit Federal Court of Appeals. She's the one that seems to be the main one. I don't know. Usually, I think trying to handicap who the selection is going to be is one of the worst things, because it's generally someone you don't see at any – that's not being talked about.
No, and the reason I asked if you consider her to fulfill the Biden pledge is, if you play the scenario out that he names her and she doesn't get approved, well, then is he now free from the pledge? And that's been now the fantasy that people play. Look, if you've got – you have, by the way, more – than plenty of qualified individuals who would fit the Biden pledge, right? Yeah. This is not even debatable, all right? If you had someone, and at least one of these, and I don't have the names in front of me, if one of these is the one I heard discussed today who was a clerk for Breyer, that one becomes perfect in terms of obviously competent, obviously of a like mind. And again, this is not a fight Republicans want. If any of them are dumb enough to be seen on television coming across as being mean to a black woman who's obviously accomplished, that is going to backfire hugely. It's another way that the Republicans could snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, and they've been known to do that over the course of time. Notice Breyer has said his resignation would not take effect until his successor is named. And that's very important with all these pending cases, by the way.
Kennedy, Cruz, those are going to be the two Republicans who are going to go after her.
Certainly Cruz, because he thinks he wants that position. It should be his job, and it's not going to happen in your lifetime or mine.
So let me put out the scenario then. I alluded to this earlier. Let's say Alito or Thomas, for whatever reason, decides to leave the court. Mm-hmm. And it becomes so you're replacing, just like Scalia, it was, you know, Republicans were furious that Obama was going to be able to replace Scalia. And so that's why they did the shenanigans to basically stop him from doing it. Right. If you're in this next year and all of a sudden that happens, how hard do you think the Republicans will push back on that one?
I don't care, because it has no merit. I mean, sure. I mean, they could. There's no analogy. There's no analogy Republicans can use, because the Garland example was to say, well, this is the last year of a second term, so it's wide open. They then distinguished it, not with credibility. They distinguished it last year by saying, well, Trump's still the president and he's running for election, so Biden's going to be the president. He claims he's running for election. He's not giving any quarter on that issue. So go ahead and make your claim. But the Republicans had the Garland example, tried to distinguish it in 2020. I don't think it's merit. It's a distinction, but I don't think it's one that holds up. What could you possibly claim? Even in 2024, with Joe Biden on the ballot, you couldn't claim anything.
So if the Republicans win back the Senate next year, and then he gets another Supreme Court justice, say January of 2023, he gets a Supreme Court justice, you're saying that you feel the Republicans will allow him to seat the justice?
They may stop it. They may try to stop it, but with no credibility is what I'm saying. Okay. They've got no argument that could be made. What are they going to say? Joe's demented, and so we don't trust him? That's ridiculous. They may try.
Hour two is up next.
Hi,
thanks, Jeff.
I'm Scott Shambaugh.
Oh, a feisty visit with Jeff Stein. Just real quick here before we get to Democrat of the Day. And Brett, you can confirm whether I heard this correctly. When Stein says, well, Harry Reid started carving out exceptions to the filibuster for judges, and then here comes the Republican. The only reason you're bringing up Harry Reid is you're trying to do the both sides thing. And trying to argue anything that Harry Reid did was effectively counterpointed by the GOP and the Merrick Garland disaster and the Ruth Bader Ginsburg replacement. None of that makes – no. This is a completely different game these people are playing. And to sit there and try to even bring up Harry Reid, that's why I kind of lost it. I was like, no. This is not Harry Reid. Stop talking about Harry Reid. This is the Republicans.
Harry Reid hasn't been there in 10 years either.
Yeah, exactly. And Harry Reid didn't stop Supreme Court justices from being approved, nor did he then 4 years later ram through an appointment because we've got to do this before the election. You know, that's – you know, don't try to – Harry Reid has nothing to do with – you can bring up Tip O'Neill, for God's sakes. You can bring up anyone. It doesn't matter. They're irrelevant. The only reason – when I heard Harry Reid, the first thing I thought is like, he's just basically just trying to validate it. Now, he says I was wrong, that I'm better than that. The reality is I heard what I heard, and that's why I smack back at it. I stand by it, although I didn't mean to make Jeff so angry. But the reality is no. When you're looking at the Supreme Court – he's right. They're not going to make a big deal out of the replacement for Breyer just because it's going to be a liberal replacing a liberal. But I think he's fooling himself if one of the conservative judges positions come open, that the Republicans are going to fight tooth and nail to stop Biden from having a chance to seat them before the next election. I guarantee it. So, but no, I think it's fair. But once again, it's Harry Reid has nothing to do with what happened with the Republican Party and the Supreme Court justices. Had nothing to do with it at that point. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. The senator from my district, hey, he's my senator, of course, 7th District 46, part of Plymouth, Golden Valley, St. Louis Park, Hopkins, is Senator Ron Latz. He has been in the Minnesota Senate for a while, and thank God he is there. He is our Democrat of the day, kind enough today to join us from St. Paul. Hi, Senator. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing very well, sir. I got a funny story I want to share with you. I know someone that covers Republicans over in St. Paul, and I asked them about 2 months ago, who are the Republicans really scared of when it comes to Democrats? And they said one was Governor Walz. They also said Speaker Hortman. But the name that they mentioned to me was you, Ron Latz. He said a lot of the senators are scared of Ron Latz because he knows his numbers, he knows his facts, and he is passionate, and he will let them hear about it. So congratulations. You put some fear in them.
Well, thank you. I guess if that means respect and that means I can get some things done and I can call them out when they misrepresent things, then I guess that's what I do.
We have talked quite a bit over the last year about the way that the Republicans have and over the last 4 years, really, or 3 years, rather, the way the Republicans have treated the Democrats in the Senate is very much a sit still and shut up and we'll tell you when to talk sort of thing. It's been frustrating for you, I know, because the Republicans, there's been a level of dishonesty behind everything, whether it's not letting you see bills, having hearings in private, not letting the public see what's going on. And, you know, and then coming out with an agenda laden, you know, bills at the very last second to try to basically jam them through. It's got to be very frustrating for you.
It is frustrating because the public has a hard time paying attention and making their voices heard. But, you know, the bottom line is right now the Republicans have the majority of the votes in the Senate. And whether they do it last minute or they do it, you know, with a little advance warning, they've got the votes to pass the stuff they want to pass. Now, it's easier for them if they don't give time for the opposition stakeholders or public to ramp up an effort, you know, to call them out on it. But the bottom line is it's they got the numbers. And we can holler and scream and tell everyone that they're giving us bad information and say how bad the policy is. But until we change the numbers in the Senate, we're going to have to live with those outcomes. And thank God right now we've got the majority in the House so that the Senate can't just turn whatever they want into law. And thank God we've got a governor that's going to hold them accountable as well.
As frustrating as it was, let's talk last year. What was an accomplishment, something that you felt was a win for you in the Senate session last year?
Well, I would say overall, from a budget standpoint, we got a pretty good budget. We put almost 2.5% on the formula for the K-12 education in the first year, 2% in the second year. You know, and at the time, that was pretty solid numbers. And so we passed over $1 billion bonding bill last September. So we've done some decent things. You know, there are things that, you know, were left on the table we would have preferred to get done. But I'd say we did a pretty good job in the last year and a half of passing a reasonable budget, reasonable policy agenda. You know, there are certain things like paid family leave that we couldn't get passed and we won't be able to pass with the current majority. But there are other things that we've been able to get done. So I'm pretty happy, particularly with, you know, funding on our education. Education has other challenges, of course, with the pandemic and everything going on right now, which are a little harder to deal with.
I'm going to presume that as we look at this upcoming year here, this upcoming session, that's going to be a high priority for you is working on, you know, the education and kind of filling in these gaps where, once again, no one expected this with the pandemic. It's been kind of a, you know, as we go sort of situation. But as we go, we're noticing the cracks. We need to fill those cracks and make sure that the funding is there and the needed resources are there as well for the education side.
So among those resources, and you talk about the cracks, the most noticeable fissures are with regard to the mental health of the kids. You know, the work from home has been hard on some, while others have you know, done very well. But the kids need the socialization. They need to see their friends. They need to be in person where the teachers can see them and give them the individualized attention that they need. And you know, our teachers and our paraprofessionals and the administrators in the schools are at the breaking point, too, especially with so many of them out right now. So I would expect we'll have a pretty direct focus on funding for our essential workers and, in particular, in the schools, trying to make sure we get the mental health counseling and resources available to help our learners through the process and make sure our teachers can get a break, too.
Of course, Republicans, when we look at education specifically, they're going to definitely come on in with the argument that we should gut the public school budgets, allow for vouchers, allow for more charter schools, and basically purge those budgets completely, and basically make sure the public schools are left with less resources because they feel as if that public schools to a point are an abomination, that they shouldn't be there. Are you expecting the same thing again this time around, that is, you know, with especially with the election year, that they're going to play a lot of politics with education?
Well, this is an election year, and they're going to push their hot button issues, vouchers being among them, tax credits, or secondary level tax credits, so they can try to hide it behind the ball and get away with it constitutionally to fund, religious schools as well. They're going to do that because they're going to be pushing for the endorsement within their own districts, and you got multiple senators running for governor who are going to be playing to that part of their constituency. I don't think any of that's going to pass. I don't think Governor Walz will let it become law. But it's going to be a battle on the Senate floor over those issues. I do think we've got enough money in the projected budget, however, to put some good money back on the formula, or to add it to the formula, because we're still shy of what our schools need. And with inflation pushing up the costs of education, just the basics to keep the lights on, we've got to make sure they've got the adequate funding.
Ron Latz, Senator, District 46, Democrat of the day. You are the ranking minority member on the Judiciary and the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy committees. One of the things that they're obviously, the Republicans today came on out with a very aggressive pro-police, heavy punishment for crime, taking the power away from the Hennepin County and the Ramsey County attorneys sort of agenda. But yet at the same time, last year, multiple times, the Democrats tried to get the Republicans to pass a bill that said if you are a white supremacist, if you are a Nazi, if you are a member of the KKK, that you can't be a police officer in Minnesota. And repeatedly they said, we are not going to do that in a budget bill. I mean, as they've got this heavy-duty agenda for the police, are you guys going to at least try to get that language put back in there to say, hey, white supremacists probably shouldn't be police officers in the state of Minnesota?
I absolutely will try to get that language put back in. But let's be straight about this. We have a problem right now with increasing crime, and we have to figure out a way to address it. I just don't happen to think that, ramping up penalties is the way to do it. And I certainly don't think that defunding prosecutors is the way to do it. And that's Senator Limmer's approach to this. I think a more data-driven, more common-sense approach to this. And that's going to mean, yes, getting adequate resources, boosting the resources for law enforcement, getting the numbers back so they've got officers on the street and they've got officers to investigate crimes. And so they make those who want to commit crimes or are thinking about it know that they're going to get caught. It's not the threat of doing 2 years instead of 3 years in jail that's going to stop people from committing crimes. But if they think they can get away with it, they're more likely to do it. So we've got to make them think they can't get away with it, number one. Number two, you got to make sure we got adequate funding for probation oversight. And we've got a bipartisan justice reinvestment group that is going to be coming out with proposals in the next week or two, February 1st, actually, I think the report's coming out. We are a very heavy probation state, which is a good thing. We already incarcerate an awful lot of people in this country. But when someone's on probation, if they're having trouble on probation, we've got to make sure we got the resources to help them stay law-abiding. 60% of the people who go to prison in Minnesota are going back because they violated probation or parole, much of it technical violations. So we should do that. We need to take measures to boost community confidence in our law enforcement officers, because then the community, many of whom know who's committing these crimes, will feel comfortable sharing that information. And, there was a shooting at a funeral a week ago. I guarantee you a lot of people at that funeral know exactly who pulled the trigger, but they aren't willing to go tell the police officers about it because they're afraid of retaliation. If the police officers have the resources and there's a confidence in the community that the police officers are going to respond appropriately, they're going to share that information, and we'll get these violent criminals off the street that way.
Well,
and one other thing, because you got carjacking is done by juveniles, you know, you got to be able to catch them, but you also got to be able to deal with them appropriately as juveniles. And at some level, the violent crime, they need to be put away. But at some level, kids need to be have the rehabilitation so they don't get to that level of violence in the first place. And that takes resources toward juvenile rehabilitation as well.
I do enjoy Republicans who always screams, keep your nose out of my district. But, boy, they sure love sticking their nose way up in Hennepin County and Ramsey County. That's for sure. The, you know, one of the things you brought up police officers and you brought up that funeral story. You know, you do have a problem here in the state of Minnesota. You have the case of, you know, Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. You have Kim Potter, the Dante Wright shooting. The Stallings videos, holy cow. I mean, there still has not been any accountability for those videos. You also, you know, you have, you know, the case of Hutchinson, the Hennepin County Sheriff. You know, there are police officers, law enforcement that are definitely not exactly endearing themselves to the community through their actions. There's I think a lot of people feel as if there has to be, yes, obviously, deal with crime, deal with accountability, but there has to be some level of accountability from the police officers when they do bad things.
Well, and that's the third prong of the approach here, which is to boost accountability for law enforcement. We actually took some pretty substantial steps in that direction in the last couple of years. But I would say I would prioritize this coming session boosting the authority and the resources of the Post Board to investigate allegations of officers that have committed crimes or done other things which are not helpful to being productive law enforcement officers and being able to take licensing action. You know, to be a lawyer in Minnesota, it doesn't take a crime to get us suspended from the bar to practice law. It takes a lot lower misconduct. And I think that police officers who have a much more direct impact on people's well-being than lawyers do in a lot of ways, they should be subject to the same level of scrutiny and accountability as well. So I think we've got a number of things that we can do this upcoming legislative session, and I hope that we can find bipartisan support for doing that. We all have a stake in having good, solid law enforcement officers who are doing the job right, and most cops do the job right, and we should have confidence in them. There's a problem
Absolutely.
With a few, and they make it hard on everyone. And they need to be rooted out of the system.
No, absolutely. And the vast majority of police officers are absolutely outstanding individuals. But, you know, that's why it's sometimes a little frustrating when they themselves don't condemn the bad behavior, because it makes them all look bad when the bad stuff does happen. On a different note here, there's a lot of speculation that the Senate Republicans are immediately going to try to get rid of Jan Malcolm, the head of the Minnesota Department of Health. As Kurt Dowd, the minority leader in the House, had said, perform an execution of one of the commissioners for the governor. Do you have any insight on whether or not that vote is actually going to take place and they are going to try to get rid of Jan Malcolm in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, I don't have any inside information on that. You know, they refused to take that vote off the table to allow the governor to call a special session to get money into the hands of our essential workers that have, you know, really gone overboard and placed themselves personally, their health and their lives at risk to take care of the rest of us during the pandemic. And so the governor could refuse to call a special session, but the governor can't refuse to start the regular session because he has no authority there. We're starting regular legislative session, and the Republican majority in the Senate has the power to bring that up at any time. And they've got the numbers if they wanted to vote that way. What's most disturbing to me is that they would be taking an absolute brilliant professional who's followed the science as the science is developing, has really done a wonderful job of protecting Minnesotans. And because they see some political advantage to going after her, and they feel they might need a head on a platter, then they're willing to do that, including a number of senators that are running for governor, and they think this is going to be something that will help them get an advantage in their campaign for governor. It would be an absolute tragedy, and it would be anti-science, and it would be anti-public health. And, you know, you can have legitimate disagreements over philosophy and the role of government and so on. But when you've got an extraordinary leader like Jen Malcolm making her pay the price for, you know, a virus that doesn't target people based on their politics, it just targets human biology, that would be a real tragedy.
Yeah. Agree with you wholeheartedly. She's trying to save lives, and they're basically saying, no, we want to be like Florida. And I'm like, okay, no. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. Senator Ron Latt, Senate District 46. He's my senator, and I can't tell you how pleased I am. I mean, I'm doing it right. I got you. I got Cheryl Joachim. I've got Tina Smith, Amy Klobuchar, Governor Walz. I've done it right in my district. I got some fantastic representation. You are as well. You're looking forward to – we've got redistricting coming up here. Hopefully I stay in your district. I hope that's going to be the case. But you've got your campaign starting up here for the 2022 election, correct?
That's correct, Matt.
If people would like to – go ahead.
I was going to say, I hope I get to keep representing you directly.
I hope so, too. I mean, I've got a really good senator. I have zero complaints. Zero. I think you're fantastic. Ron – RonLatz.org, RonLatz.org, RonLatz.org. And by the way, I want to make sure I got it right. It's Plymouth, Golden Valley, St. Louis Park, Hopkins, right?
And Medicine Lake.
That's right. That Medicine Lake. Forget Medicine Lake. And Medicine Lake there. So obviously not a really difficult district to get to. If you'd like to help volunteer or make a donation, once again, RonLatz.org, RonLatz.org. Senator, thank you very much. Thank you for everything you do for me personally and as my senator. Thank you for everything you do for the state of Minnesota. I think you're brilliant over there. And all my best as we continue this session as it gets ready to get going here, okay?
Great to be with you, Matt. Thank you.
My absolute pleasure. Senator Ron Latz, one of the best senators in the Senate, period, period. Probably my favorite senator. Dead serious. Probably my favorite senator. Susan Kent's good. I like Susan, but, you know, Ron Latz. Probably Ron Latz. There you go. Well, Lindsey Port, too. Now you're making me play favorites.
Yeah, you're
I'm going to get
you are getting yourself in trouble here.
You know who isn't? I could name some names on who I don't like as a senator, but hey, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Republicans. The Senate Republicans were out today with their vision on how they'd address basically violent crime. They want to basically give tax breaks. They want to kind of go after certain things with in regards to, you know, with education. But, you know, they're kind of – their main looks like they're going after you know, crime is, they're going to be the big one. They're going to be screaming. But this kind of goes back to a point I've been making. You guys can't let these guys off the hook. I mean, I'll give you a great example of this. House Representative Stubby up in the 8th, right? Takes credit for the airport funding from the infrastructure bill, which he voted against. And the media in this state said they tried to make one call. His campaign, his office did not respond. And they said, well, what are you going to do? Well, you hound him on that lie. That was a lie. He lied. He was against that bill. For him to take credit for it afterwards is a lie. But too many journalists in this state basically called, well, they said they're not going to talk about it. So I guess that issue is decided. No. Do your damn job. Go out there when he has a press conference. Hey, by the way, you took credit for the funding for the airports. Wasn't that part of the infrastructure bill you voted against proudly? You got to hold these people accountable. Give you an another example of this. Let me give you another example of this. In Texas, last year, through Republican deregulation of the home energy system, the home heating system, when a cold snap hit Texas, which is not extremely unique, basically the system failed because the Republicans said, you guys, we're not going to regulate your delivery system. You guys can self-regulate. And guess what? They didn't do it. And so they themselves, who were supposed to self-regulate, they didn't do it. And the Republicans, instead of holding the electrical and the heating companies responsible, basically said first to their constituents, well, maybe you should die. And seriously, there was a lot of Texas Republicans who said, you know, the weak will perish. We'll move on. Whoosh. Then they came back and said, well, we don't want anyone to perish, but just to let you know, you're probably going to get charged $300 per day for home heating. So try to be careful. Sweet Jesus, in any given society, I think they have just shown that no one should vote for a Texas Republican again because they clearly do not care about their constituents. And yet this upcoming election, even though there's all this evidence out there, they'll win a ton of votes because they basically aren't ever held freaking accountable for their actions. Jeremy Miller, the majority leader in the Senate, came out and said they're talking about violent crime. One or two of them are not bad. I did like the idea of whether it was covering through state funds or a tax break, the training of police officers. That's actually not a bad one. You know, it's a works program at that point. I don't really have a problem with that, as long as maybe we should put up the basic standard that white supremacists shouldn't be allowed to be police officers in the state of Minnesota. I know. But a lot of this is basically, once again, kicking open the doors of Minneapolis, St. Paul and telling them, you can't do this. We're telling you, you can't do this, which is never going to get through the Democratic House. Let's just be honest. The Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission, he's criticized them. He's going to introduce a legislation requiring Senate confirmation of appointees to the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Roger Chamberlain said on education, Republicans will focus on empowering parents and basically stripping away every public school fund they've got to give to private schools and religious schools. That's what they want to do. That's the Republican mantra. Kill any large program that's got taxpayer dollars and give those taxpayer dollars to a private institution, even though, once again, the private institutions, the charter schools, do a much worse job at educating kids than the public schools. Take a look at the charter schools numbers. They're horrible. You know, don't get me wrong. Hey, there's one or two that are great, but the vast majority, they don't do the job. The taxes, it's pretty hilarious. You know, the Republicans are going to go on out there and they're going to do what they always do. We're going to give you your money back. They went after Walls. They went after Walls. They said the direct payments. He's saying that the Walls checks were insulting and paltry. The Republicans are notorious for giving the entire middle class and lower class like $8. Everyone gets $8. And so you can go get some Yoo-hoo and some Funyuns and that's it. Meanwhile, the millionaires and billionaires of the state, they get $1 million tax breaks because they deserve it because they're wealthy. That's what the Republican, and that's what they're going to do. That's why today they didn't deliver any numbers with their agenda. They didn't say anything because they don't want you to know what their numbers are. They don't want you to see what they're going to do. They want to keep that all private. And the reality is they're not going to – you think Republicans are going to give the middle and lower class a legitimate tax break? Please. They are going to shovel most of that money into the top 1% of people in the state and say the rest of you, here's your $8. Go get some Yoo-hoo and some Funyuns. See, I was helping you. See, all this stuff. I mean, it's like when they're tough on crime. We're going to have mandatory sentences until a white guy gets convicted. It's like, gosh, there's got to be some way to have some lenience for the white guy. He doesn't deserve to go to jail like the other people do. I mean, that's what they do. That's why Democrats, I'm going to repeat what I have been saying from the get-go. And you heard it with Ron Latch. And the reason why I really like Senator Ron Latch is because he does not pull his punches. It was a little disappointing to hear Ken Martin say, I'm not going to go after the GOP because of Jennifer Carnahan and that. No, go after them. This is a kidney punch. Really, seriously, you need to go get these guys. If you allow the Republicans to turn the entire year into stopping those carjackers, and we're going to give you a tax break that we're not going to tell you about, well, you're going to get your butts handed to you. When they fire Jan Malcolm, you need to hold every one of them accountable and say, why did you fire the head of the health committee, the health commission during a pandemic when all she was doing was following science? You need to hold these guys right now. The Republicans right now cannot get away from their base. They cannot. So if you ask them, do you believe in vaccinations? They have to pander to their base because they don't want to get primaried. So they have to say, well, I think there's still some research. Hammer them on that. Absolutely hammer them on it. Ask every single one of them who won the 2020 presidential election. Because right now, they got to pander to that extreme far-right base. So they got to come out and say, there's still some questions. You do that now. You get them on record. You get them on tape. You get the video. Because come the general election, they're all frantically going to be like, why are we talking about vaccines? I've always been pro-vaccine. And that's when you throw that video back in the face. Like, what are you talking about? 2 months ago, here is you right here. I don't believe in science. I believe in ivermectin. You got to go hammer these people. You have to hold them accountable. Stop being impressed with your own reflection in the mirror, DFL. It's time to get dirty. It's time to get in the gutter. It's time to fight. And you've got low-hanging fruit all around you. Start picking it. Ask them on the record, do you believe that Joe Biden is the legitimate president of the United States? They don't want to answer that question. Get them on record. Ask them if they think vaccines work. What was my numbers? What was the numbers I brought up today? Let's see here. 3,585,745 people have completed the vaccine series in Minnesota. In a state of 5.6 million, basically the three-fifths of the state's vaccinated, and that includes people who are under the age of 18 that can't vote. The vast majority of voters are vaccinated. If they have to basically run as the party of anti-science, they're going to lose. If they have to run as the party that Trump really won in 2020, they're going to lose. If they have to run as the party that basically executed Jan Malcolm as the head of the health committee, health department, as a commissioner there during a pandemic, they're going to lose. You've got to start fighting them and put them on the record and hold them accountable. Because right now, Republican voters are desperately looking for any way they can ignore reality. Like Stauber, like I mentioned when I started this little rant. Pete Stauber delivered for all the airports in the district. No, he didn't. He voted against that. But until you hold him accountable, he's going to be able to drive the narrative. So get off your damn asses and start fighting. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. The election begins today. In case you missed it, stop looking in the mirror and saying how pretty you are. Go on out there and get dirty and start fighting. 952-946-6205. We're way behind. Sorry. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Robert is in Columbia Heights and giving us a call. Thanks for holding, Robert. Welcome on into the show.
Hi, Matt. I love it when you're hammering on the Republicans. I just love it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate
that. The main thing I'm calling about is Justice Breyer say he's probably going to retire. I want Laura Coates to be nominated. She's black. She's only 41. She's smart as all get out. And anyway, she he'd make an excellent Supreme Court justice.
Robert, I will say this, first of all, thank you very much for the kind words. I appreciate the phone call as well today. I'm going to repeat the same thing I said with Jeff. Trying to handicap the picks of a Supreme Court is next to impossible. If I remember correctly, Kavanaugh wasn't even on the board when he nominated Kavanaugh, which makes me think that Trump and him were out drinking. Although Trump doesn't drink, does he? They're at a KFC or something like that, you know?
That might even be.
You gonna finish that rest of that bucket? No, I can have it. How would you like to be on the Supreme Court? Actually, wait a second here. That actually seems to make some sense. It's my chicken buddy. I'm putting chicken buddy up off of the Supreme Court.
It wouldn't be beyond the realm of reality.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. I'm not going to even try to handicap this. I mean, I guarantee you this. I have great faith within the Biden administration that whoever the nominee will be very qualified and quite young, too, because that's kind of the norm now, is trying to find someone who's rose within the ranks, gets them into position, and possibly gets onto the Supreme Court. So we'll have to see where that goes. Thank you very much for the phone call. 952-946-6205. How about some good news from the Smile File? U.S. Department of Interior will not allow mining in two areas near the Boundary Waters Wilderness Area in northern Minnesota, the department said on Wednesday. The decision is a reversal of the Trump-era legal opinion, giving conservation advocates hope that nearly 250,000 acres bordering the wilderness area that include the mining areas may also be protected from development. Okay, so yay, first of all, yay, 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 I like this. Second of all, how many times do we have to have companies that are basically front organizations for international conglomerates tell us, we care about Minnesota's environment. We're going to care about the lakes and the water and the sky and the earth. Well, be very careful. Only to have said international conglomerate pollute the crap out of our state. Destroy the natural beauty, ignore their own permits, violate the land. Over it. For God's sakes, they're still doing it right now as we speak. Listen to Native Roots Radio. Ogama's got it every single night with her news. It's about 6:10 every evening. Listen to it because they are doing it right now. So no. You shouldn't trust these people because their primary goal is profits, which means not the environment, which means not doing this the safest, most environmentally safe way of doing it. It means doing it the way they can get the most money out of the system and walk away. And the narrative is the same thing every time. Especially when it comes to these precious metal mines. They go on out there, they pollute the crap out of the lakes, out of the land, out of the air. They prevent anyone from testing it, prevent anyone from seeing it. And then when they get down to where they've gotten most of the precious metals out of the ground, they find some local stooge that they sell. I've got a mine for you. It's been producing pretty well for us. You can take it over. You just have to take all responsibility for it. And the local stooge goes, yeah, sure. Okay, I'll take it. And they go and they get that mine. And what happens? All of a sudden, there's very little left in the mine, and they're left with an environmental disaster. And the new mine owner's like, oh, they lied to me. This place was a mess. I didn't tell me any of this. And what happens? Not only have we lost the pristine wilderness that is the Boundary Waters and northern Minnesota, and Minnesota's a freaking hole, but then to clean it up, the taxpayers are on the dime. Because heaven forbid, come on, Matt, I'm a Republican, and heaven forbid we actually hold a company responsible, especially when they said they do this environmentally safe. They lied through their teeth, but you know what? I still think we shouldn't charge them. Yeah, we've got a track record here. And the only reason, and let me say this about northern Minnesotans, because that's where my family's from. The only reason northern Minnesotans are on board with this is because they think that it won't be their lake and their land and their air that gets polluted. But then how many times? Well, I was so for this mine, and now look what they've done. You guys need to help me. No. You need to open up your freaking eyes and ears and pay attention to what's going on and realize, guess what? You shouldn't let international corporations come in and especially bring in toxic processes like the mining or toxic products like that shale oil. Ugh. Because they do not care. They are just looking for the permits to get this done, and they will rape the land every single time. So, yay, go team, go. Heaven forbid we lose the boundary waters. Twin Metals Minnesota, the company that's been the mining leases, vowed to fight the decision. Yay. Congressional Republicans, including the U.S. House member Pete Stauber, blasted it as damaging the local economy. Hey, Stubby, listen here, you moron. You already got the taconite mines going, right? If you actually built, three or four foundries in the United States so you could process American steel right here, guess what? Every taconite mine would be at full capacity. It would be a major economic boon and it'd create far more jobs than some toxic mine up on the boundary waters, you freaking idiot. So instead of doing your dog and pony show where you're basically the puppet of the international mining conglomeration, maybe you should actually look out for what's best for Minnesotans and for America. Build those damn foundries and get America back to work, you sniveling little piece of jackass. Anywho. That's Pete Stauber, folks. Democrats and environmental groups praise the move as protecting the important recreational and wilderness space. Marianne Bledsoe Downs, the top deputy solicitor for the Interior, wrote in a Tuesday legal memorandum to Secretary Deb Haaland that the leases granted to the Twin Metals and mine for copper, nickel, cobalt, and other minerals, the Superior National Forest, were improperly reinstated in 2019. The U.S. Forest Service never signed off on the lease renewal. For God's sakes, if the U.S. Forest Service didn't sign off on them, then yeah, they're not legal. We must be consistent with how we apply lease terms, which Pete Stauber is saying, no, don't let the Forest Service have a say. Just give them the leases. Just give them, let them pollute. Come on. That's what Pete Stauber's for. Pete Stauber, pro-pollution, pro wiping out the Boundary Waters canoe area. That's Pete Stauber. That is Pete Stauber. Oh, are we about to get a political ad with Pete Stauber in a canoe? Hi, I'm Pete Stauber. I love nature. Why would you think I'd be for polluting? Don't touch the water? Why not? Okay, so, yeah. Like I said, it's not like we don't have a track record, a fairly established track record, that international mining conglomerations and international pipeline conglomerations really could give a rat's caboose about Minnesota's wilderness. You're just for the money. Let's just be honest. You got a price tag on you, Stubby. In the news release, Twin Metals painted the decision as politically rather than legally motivated for but that was disappointing, but not surprising. The release said the company expected to win an effort to once again reverse the decision. Well, the Forest Service has to sign off on it first, so yeah. We will challenge this attempt to stop or project or defend our valid existing mineral rights, the company said. So, boy, sure sounds like they care about the environment, don't they? This is not about law. This is a political action to stop the Twin Metals project without conducting the environmental review prescribed in law. Dude, you're not going to follow any of the environmental laws anyway. How many times do we have to see this dog and pony show play out? Like I said, this yesterday. Do us the favor, all right? As opposed to in 60 to 80 years when the land is poisoned and the air is poisoned and the water's poisoned, and you want to put up a memorial for the brave water protectors that were there to try to save the state from the pipeline or the toxic metals as a way to remember the people that were trying to stop the damage that happened, why don't you tell you what? Why don't you avoid the memorial in 60 years and just don't allow these freaking things to happen? Ta-da! That's a pretty good memorial, if you ask me. Going to the Boundary Waters and sitting on a pristine shoreline and looking out as a moose is walking by. You know what? That's all the memorial we need in Minnesota. I love this. Once again, let me read this Twin Metals line. We will challenge this attempt to stop our project and defend our valid existing mineral rights. Sure sound like you're pro-environment there.
Pretty sure they're telling the truth this time.
Oh, are they?
Yeah,
are they?
I mean, they really pinky swore.
It looks like their spokesperson was a guy named Scrooge McDuck. Something about money, 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 money. I made up that whole thing about Scrooge McDuck. He is not the spokesperson for Twin Metals. And like I said, we dance on the edge of the knife, and then we have the audacity to claim why we got cut. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. You want another example of Republicans never getting held accountable? How many Republicans backed up Line 3? And then the pipeline company goes out there and punctures the aquifer and immediately doesn't follow their own permits and does the damage. Has any Republican been called out? Has any Republican said, hey, didn't you say this was going to be safe? Didn't you say this was going to work? No. No one holds them accountable, even though only 2 years ago when they pushed this through, they were horribly wrong. You got to start holding these people accountable. If you give these people a walk on all the bad behavior that they have done, well, guess what? You're not going to win a damn thing. And you sit there. I wrote this strongly worded memo about Peruvian goats, and it's going to win the day. No, it's not. Shut up. It's not. Go on out there, roll up your sleeves, and fight. That's what it's going to take. The Southwest Light Rail Transit Project, guess what, is going to cost us more money. The Metropolitan Council, a regional body that oversees Metro Transit, will consider a settlement with Lunda McCrossin, a joint venture that building the 14.5-mile Green Line extension. Today, when complete, the Southwest Light Rail line will connect Minneapolis to Eden Prairie. But the potential deal could mean a 34-month delay, pushing the opening date back to at least 2026. And Met Council is proposing to pay Lunda McCrossin $40 million up front and up to $210 million down the line. The proposed settlement stems from an ongoing dispute over changes to the project that weren't part of the original 2018 construction contract, among them adding a crash wall to separate a new light rail line from the freight train at Minneapolis, changes to the design and construction of the Kenilworth Tunnel, and the addition of the Eden Prairie Town Center station. Okay, can I just say this? I think looking at the tunnel specifically, it's not like that land. Okay, when you're talking about the wall, when you're talking about the other station, I mean, those are understandable, but you knew what you were going to dig into. You should have gone out there and done surveying. You should have done that. And then all of a sudden you start digging into it and it's like, wow, I underbid this project by a few million dollars, $20 million or $50 million. It's going to cost a lot more than I bid for. Well, whose problem is that? If you bid for the project and then you didn't understand what you were going to have to do, is that really our fault? I wish more municipalities would hold the contractors that put these bids in accountable for their bid. If they don't want to build the project, they don't have to bid. But if they go on out there and put a bid out there and then all of a sudden say, whoa, you wanted us to build through that? Yeah, you knew that. That's on you. And don't look at us and say, well, boy, did we undercut our bid? We need a lot more money. Well, maybe the answer should be tough. That's just at least my thought on it. Native Roots Radio up next. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.